So it's common to believe that our thoughts are us. Have you ever believed your thoughts? Like, I'm not good at fill in the blank. Or this happened because fill in the blank. And you think you know. You think you know why something happened, what the cause of things are, how you're responsible, how others are responsible, so on and so forth. And you really believe your thoughts. So just take a moment to reflect on today. Were there any thoughts that you sincerely believed today? Not facts like the sky appears blue. Right, but more like just random thoughts. This happened because of this, or I made a mistake. I should have done it this way. So many. For a moment today, I really believed that I had to accomplish all these different tasks. And I had just come off of the retreat, and I was definitely feeling somewhat tender, but I had this belief that I had to do A, B, C, and D, and it all had to get done today. And it was such a relief when I let go of those thoughts and realized that I didn't have to believe them anymore. We have a really strong history in this culture of identifying with our thoughts. Cogito ergo sum. I think, therefore I am. That's what Descartes said. He was rebelling against the history of the church because the church had the belief, what we, the church, think you are, that's who you are. That's what your role is. I mean, Descartes was a rebel and he transformed the Western culture in dramatic ways that are infused in our entire belief system. He challenged established authority and asserted that our personal existence, the fact that we could think, was who determined who we were, that we're human because we can think. But it's really important to question that and recognize that the emphasis on thoughts as a key element of identity is really deeply ingrained in our culture. It's so ingrained that we take it for granted. I'm a sociologist, so some of that is getting infused into this talk, and I'm really fascinated by how our taken for granted assumptions are, just so infused in our being. And it's so remarkable when we can unravel those, when we can unwrap it and start seeing them and seeing ourselves really differently. And that's what jazzes me up in whether it's in sociology or in mindfulness practices and Vipassana. Our educational system, especially, places value on thinking, right? That seems pretty apparent. And people form connections and community based on our shared values and our ideologies. These are collective thoughts that we buy into. And it's not to say that they're bad. They're just how we function. We function largely on our belief in thoughts. Media and technology has also played a significant role in amplifying the importance of thoughts in our culture. And we not only thoughts, but opinions. There's all kinds of thoughts, right? But one thought form, our opinions, and we can get into some other other thought forms in a little later in the talk, but think about the power of opinion is playing in our society now, where we have influencers and their opinions really matter. And we have the rest of us who click like and follow the influencers. Today I was grading a bunch of introduction to sociology papers, and I was very surprised by the lack of being able to go beyond an opinion and connect to an assignment, some reading materials. And there was so many opinions, but not a lot of other things besides the opinion. It made me wonder, are we starting to move into that type of thought form even more, where the opinions are really what matter? Just a thought. I don't have to believe it, but I'm putting it out there. So we also may experience a lot of compulsive thinking. You know, that narrator, I see a lot of like, yes, where we can't shut it down, right? That's just the thoughts are coming. We're narrating. I have this, I don't know. I think I'm not the only one. You can let me know. There is a continual narrator in there, narrating my whole life experience throughout the day. It's constant. So we have these compulsive thoughts. And you all have experience with meditation. And so you have experience with witnessing the thoughts and gaining a little bit of space around those thoughts. Like, who is witnessing these thoughts? If there is a witness of the thoughts, then maybe I am not my thoughts, because something else is witnessing them. Even though we might have been meditating for a long time or a short time, we might be present right now, there's still this habit that I think most, if not all of us, have. That we are our thoughts. From time to time, we really believe our thoughts. So what happens when we believe our thoughts? Well, here's some examples. Some believe that they are inherently bad people due to the presence of disturbing thoughts. So in severe instances, we have people who are grappling with obsessive compulsive disorder, and they might, for instance, have an intense fear while driving over a bridge that the bridge is going to collapse, or that they're going to drive off the edge of the bridge. They're so overwhelmed by their thoughts that they believe their thoughts to such an extent that it impacts their lives. Now, that's an extreme example, but we can think about how in our lives, our belief of our thoughts is impacting our actions, sometimes not in the most skillful ways. Or we can develop a fear of negative thoughts. I don't know if anybody has ever had this experience of being afraid of having a negative thought. For a while, I really got into the power of positive thinking, and it was super helpful, because I had had an experience where my thought train was just so negative and so hostile that this was many years ago, that it was a real saving grace to shift that and realize that I could, the power of positive thinking. And we have that messaging throughout our culture as well. It's important to be happy. In spiritual communities, there's often an emphasis on the power of positive thinking. But again, when taken to the extreme, that can lead us to focus exclusively on nurturing these positive thoughts, and then fearing the negative one, that negative ones might inflict some sort of harm on us. So we can get into all of these kind of thought circles. And then what we see a lot happening in the culture now is the emphasis on thoughts can lead to a polarization and echo chambers where individuals surround themselves with like-minded people and are less open to differing perspectives. And these are all based in thought. At the retreat that I was at, Howie Cohen said, "Thoughts make our world." And I thought that was a very powerful thought. Thoughts make our world. And some of that is beautiful. There's much that's beautiful about the human created world. But thoughts also create war. They also create all the isms, the racism, the sexism, homophobia, classism. So in the language of Buddhism, we often suffer when we believe our thoughts. I have a quote here from Byron Katie. She said, "I discovered that when I believed my thoughts, I suffered, but that when I didn't believe them, I didn't suffer, and that this is true for every human being. Freedom is as simple as that. I found that suffering is optional." So, like Byron Katie, Buddhism teaches us that there are other ways of relating with our thoughts besides believing them, that there's other ways of relating with them. So we can relate to our thoughts with mindfulness and acceptance, observing our thoughts without judgment, just watching them as they arise and as they pass, noticing how ephemeral they are, that we don't need to believe them. They arise and they pass. They're here one moment, gone the next. And we can develop a more compassionate relationship with our thoughts. That these are part of the human experience. So sometimes we develop this negative relationship with our thoughts. Like the thoughts are the bad guys. Notice how our mind looks for the enemy. And if it's not the other, it's our thoughts. Or something else. So we can develop a different kind of relationship with our thoughts. Our thoughts are like what the mind does. You know, just as the eyes see and the ears hear, the mind thinks, produces thoughts, and if we watch them, they're really amazing. They're fascinating. Thoughts can take us to the infinite ends of the universe. We can conjure up a thought in a moment. I can say purple flower, and everyone here seeing a purple flower right now. But there is no actual purple flower, I don't think, in this room. there might be in that picture. How amazing is that? How amazing is it that happens? So we can develop, you know, awe and wonder around thoughts. The key is not to attach. And that's the main Buddhist teaching, that when we attach to anything, when we grasp and want to keep it the way it is, that produces suffering. I often love the stories of the Buddha and his frenemy, Mara. This is like in Buddhist stories, the demon that comes to haunt the Buddha and disturb the Buddha. And even after the Buddha's awakening, there's these stories of where this kind of like basically negative thought patterns come to the Buddha. And the Buddha had this name, Mara. Ananda, his attendant, would sometimes say, "Buddha Ananda has come to pay a visit." And the Buddha would say, "Welcome, Mara. Invite him to tea." So what is this saying? Welcome the thoughts, whatever they may be. Welcome them, invite them to tea. Let them arise, and then let them go. Mara doesn't have to stay for tea forever, you know. But in a way, Mara, or the disturbing thought forms, are like a companion to the Buddha, you know, somebody who's been there with him throughout his life. And likewise, our thoughts, the negative, the positive, all of them, they're with us. They're part of us. They arise, they pass, they're ephemeral, but they're consistent. Thich Nhat Hanh said, to say to our thoughts, especially the disturbing ones, something kind and compassionate, treat ourselves as we would want others to treat us, as we would want a good friend, a dear friend, to treat ourselves. And he would say to the thought, darling, or to ourselves, darling, I know you suffer. I'm here for you. So when sadness arose, or anger, and all the thoughts associated with those, grief, he would just speak really sweetly to himself and encourage us to practice in that way. And thoughts can even be a portal to awareness. And this is where, you know, we can have a deep appreciation for our thoughts. So they don't have to be a distraction from presence. We often think of like, oh, thoughts are just coming. They're just barraging us, and they're such a distraction, and I need to like let go of my thoughts so I can focus, right? But what happens when we pay acute attention to the thoughts? We get curious about them, not what they are, not the themes and the elements of the thoughts, not getting into analyzing the thoughts or thinking about the thoughts, but noticing them. Where do they come from? Getting curious, like, where did that thought come from? And if we pay really deep attention, we can notice the space between thoughts. Watch them. Can you see the point before they arise? There's a moment before a thought comes. And sometimes you can almost feel it, like there's a thought on the horizon. And get real subtle, real nuanced with the thoughts. And then can you notice when they disappear? And they fade back. Where do they go? That's interesting. Don't get too caught up. You can't have an analysis about where these thoughts come from and where they go. That'll just produce more thoughts and more compulsive thinking. But just watching with a little bit of curiosity. So I thought we could do a little bit of practice around thoughts, and I'll do a few short guided meditations. And the main practice in Vipassana is just witnessing thoughts. And as we're witnessing thoughts, we're not identifying with them, right? We're not believing our thoughts, we're just noticing them. Thoughts arise, thoughts pass, and we're just watching the passing display. We can become interested in the ephemeral nature of our thoughts. Even a sense of wonder can arise. And then when we're not lost in the mind, we're not lost in thoughts, we can also, this is a cause of celebration. We can take a moment to be, just to notice that I'm free of thoughts. I've returned to the present moment. As Thich Nhat Hanh would say, present moment, wonderful moment. In this moment, is there really anything wrong? And Howie Cohen said this weekend, notice the top 10 tunes. In other words, there's many different types of thoughts. There's planning, judging, evaluating, reminiscing, analyzing, rehearsing, narrating, forming opinions. Any that I'm missing? Sort of about cover many of them. And what's most important in this practice is just simply noticing. You don't need to do anything else. So let's take a couple of minutes and just, again, get comfortable. I invite you to close your eyes. And just practice noticing whatever arises. Perhaps give it a little note, judging mind, thinking, planning, and so forth. Notice if you get lost on the thought train. And you can adopt a detached stance towards thoughts. Just noticing thoughts. Maybe saying, like, thoughts are happening, watching them arise and watching them pass. See if you can notice the space between two thoughts. And notice when one thought is arising when it's passing. Maybe you're not following these instructions and a little judgment has come into your mind. I'm not good at this. Or maybe I'm great at this. Just notice. That too is a thought. Watch it arise, watch it pass. Take three more conscious breaths. When you feel ready, you can open your eyes if you'd like. So, I'd like to end with an extended quote from Suzuki Roshi. He said, "When you are practicing meditation, do not try to stop your thinking. Let it stop by itself. If something comes into your mind, let it come in and let it go out. It will not stay for long. When you try to stop your thinking, it means you are bothered by it. Do not be bothered by anything. It appears as if something comes from outside your mind, but actually, it is only the waves of your mind. And if you are not bothered by the waves, gradually, they will become calmer and calmer. Many sensations come. Many thoughts or images arise, but they are just waves of your own mind. Nothing comes from outside your mind. Usually, we think of our mind as receiving impressions and experiences from outside, but that is not a true understanding of our mind. The true understanding is that the mind includes everything. When you think something comes from outside, it means only that something appears in your mind. Nothing outside yourself can cause any trouble. You yourself make the waves in your mind. If you leave your mind as it is, it will become calm. This mind is called big mind. If your mind is related to something outside itself, that mind is a small mind. A limited mind. If your mind is not related to anything else, then there is no dualistic understanding in the activity of your mind. You understand activity as just waves of your mind. Big mind experiences everything within itself. Do you understand the difference between the two minds? The mind which includes everything, and the mind which is related to something. Actually, they are the same thing, but the understanding is different, and your attitude towards your life will be different according to the understanding you have. So we might consider thoughts just as waves of the mind and develop a non-reactive relationship with them. Give thoughts some space. Mindfulness, meditation really helps to do that. You can watch them arise and pass like waves in the ocean and just see what happens. Thank you for your attention tonight.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.